Art and Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Equivocation, starting October 22nd, a comedy about Shakespeare, where he receives a royal commission to write a historical play on a treasonous act and must find a way to tell the truth without losing his head. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or at artandtheater.org. Art and Theater Company supports WHYY.
Michael Nutter today called for abolishing the School Reform Commission in one of his final policy speeches as Philadelphia mayor. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Our Tom McDonald attended today's speech here at WHYY and filed this report.
Mayor Nutter called for getting rid of the School Reform Commission and to return city schools to local control.
A return to local control will give us real authority over the education of our children. Studies show that when communities feel connected and responsible for the schools in their own neighborhoods, they become even more involved in the school life of their children.
SRC head Marjorie Neff says this change cannot happen overnight and could never happen without a new state funding formula.
If it happens without the funding, if it becomes the total focus for the community, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference.
Otis Hackney, principal of South Philadelphia High School, says after working in the suburbs, there's only so much you can do without enough resources.
My students right now in a high school only know high school from a deficit model. They have never seen high schools with a rich, robust menu of classes and extracurricular activities. They don't know what high school should feel like.
To get rid of the SRC, either the legislature and governor have to agree on it, or all five SRC board members could vote to abolish the commission. Superintendent William Height was at Nutter's speech and didn't want to comment about the proposal.
One thing that is crystal clear is that without additional revenue, we're going to be facing these problems regardless of who is sitting in the governance seat. And so regardless of the structure, we need to fix the funding and the lack of sufficient resources in schools. And that's what we're faced with now.
In the address, Mayor Nutter also called for more flexibility with teacher assignments, and he urged Philly parents to become more involved in the schools. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
1983 marks the last time an independent candidate ran a credible campaign for mayor of Philadelphia. Plenty has changed since then, except for the odds of third-party candidates taking the big office in City Hall. They're still really steep. Next week, there will be three independent mayoral candidates on the ballot in Philadelphia, as WHYY's Katie Culinary reports.
The police were at the top of the billboard charts when an attorney named Thomas Leonard ran for Philadelphia mayor as an independent. It was a hot race in 1983. Leonard, a longtime Democrat, dropped out of the primary to run against Wilson Good, who would go on to become the city's first black mayor. St. Joseph's University history professor Randall Miller remembers.
He waited, and he came in late as an independent, which angered the Republican candidate because basically it split the white vote. And this is an unusual circumstance where race, more than any other factor, played into the decisions of people to run and how they would be able to attract the support. We don't have any of that in 2015.
What we do have, Miller says, is a powerful Democratic machine and lots of voters who are just not that interested in this race. So why do independent candidates bother running? To get our attention, Miller says.
They'll say they expect to win and they want to win, but they want to get their particular issue into the public mind, and an election is a way to do it.
And now, without further ado, here are the three people running for mayor without the benefit of backing from the Republicans or Democrats. Let's start with Boris Kindy. If Miller is right and independent candidates are running to raise one particular issue, Kindy's is really obvious. It's printed right on the bright red tie he wears to almost every interview.
My main agenda is to bring $15 minimum wage to city of Philadelphia.
Kindy was born in Croatia and fled during that country's war of independence in the 90s. Today, he lives in South Philly and works as a property manager. Speaking on WHYY's Radio Times, Kindy says he's running because he felt he had to do something to publicly address the city's high poverty rate.
I hate injustice and unfairness, and it's the main reason why I want to do something for Philadelphia, for its people. Around 26% of citizens live in extreme poverty.
One way independents like Kindi can get these messages out is by getting invited to participate in debates with the major party candidates. However, they've only been included in one of four debates this fall. None of them is angrier about it than Jim Foster, who brought it up at the debate hosted by the local United Way last month.
Which I think is just plain outrageous and disgraceful. So this is the only chance we have.
Foster lives in Germantown, the same neighborhood he grew up in, and where he now publishes a local newspaper called The Independent Voice. He says Germantown, which once had one of the city's busiest commercial corridors, is now a shell of its former self.
What did it? Corruption. Corruption to the highest level.
Foster says he's running to expose decades of what he calls reckless waste in city government and to challenge the two-party system. That brings us to the final candidate.
My name's John. And hi,
John.
And this is
Osborne.
Hi, how you
doing?
Osborne Hart works nights stocking shelves at Walmart. He's running on the Socialist Workers Party ticket. He and his friend John Skaggs, who's running for city council, are knocking on doors together in northeast Philadelphia. It's a working-class neighborhood, and these are the kinds of voters they want to reach.
And we're campaigning around one of the big social issues that are going on in the United States now.
Of all three independent mayoral candidates, Hart is the most realistic about his odds. But having a good reason to go door-to-door and talk about workers' safety and the need for a $15 minimum wage, the issues he's passionate about, that's enough for him.
Our victory is that working people get a voice in the elections and point to the direction that we've been talking about.
Hart can take solace that Democratic nominee Jim Kenney, the likely winner of the mayor's race, is on the record supporting a $15 minimum wage. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Tomorrow, we'll look at independent candidates in another of next week's races. It's been at least half a century since an independent won a seat on Philadelphia's city council, though that hasn't stopped four candidates from throwing their hats into the ring. When it comes to tick-borne illness, Lyme disease gets a lot of attention, but another bacterial infection, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, can be just as bad or worse. It occurs in every state, and it's particularly common in Delaware. WHYY's Jessica McDonald has the latest from the CDC on the disease.
At first, it's just a fever and a headache. Then there's a rash. And soon, Rickettsia rickettsii, the bacteria that caused Rocky Mountain spotted fever, can take over.
It has a case fatality rate in untreated disease that exceeds 20%. In some countries, we see it as high as 40%. So it rivals Ebola in some respects in terms of its lethality.
That's Chris Paddock, a CDC pathologist who's been puzzling over some confusing trends. Cases of the disease have been going up, but the number of deaths hasn't. Paddock says there has been a rise in the number and spread of the Lone Star tick.
It's a very aggressive human-biting tick. And what's very interesting about this particular species is that it carries another spotted fever group, Rickettsia, known as Rickettsia amblyommii.
That's a far less dangerous species of bacteria, but it's similar enough that anyone previously infected by it might test positive for Rocky Mountain. Paddock thinks that explains the discrepancy. Delaware epidemiologist Paula Eggers says she hasn't noticed an increase in Rocky Mountain cases, although the CDC hypothesis seems reasonable.
It's been kind of steady with very minor fluctuations over the 10-year period. We've averaged about 20 cases a year.
With its small population, that makes Delaware one of the states with the highest infection rates in the country. The good news, Paddock says, is that all types of spotted fevers can be treated with the same antibiotic. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania's highest court says the director of the State Office of Open Records cannot be removed by the governor without cause. The Supreme Court ruled today that Governor Tom Wolf overstepped his authority when he fired Eric Arneson in January. Arneson says his office comes into play when someone's denied access to government records and appeals the decision.
For the office to really make fair and impartial decisions, it's vital that the office be able to think about cases and decide cases without worrying that there's going to be some kind of blowback.
Arneson, a legislative aide who helped draft the current right-to-know law, was appointed by outgoing Governor Tom Wolf in January, make that Tom Corbett in January, and that was just 1 week before Wolf's inauguration. Pennsylvania State Senator Anthony Williams of Philadelphia is calling for Supreme Court Justice Michael Akin to resign for reportedly having offensive emails in a private account. Williams, the Senate Democratic whip, says there should be no room on the bench for Akin, who's under investigation for his involvement in the messages. Akin has apologized for the emails, which reportedly contain offensive and stereotypical jokes. The Senate Democratic caucus is not taking a position in the matter. It's 6:16. This evening's forecast, cloudy skies and then rain likely overnight, low falling back to 52 degrees. Tomorrow, rain heaviest in the afternoon, high 68. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's pause now for some music. The band Afro-Celt Sound System is a shifting set of musicians from Ireland, Great Britain, and West Africa. From their first album, Sound Magic, this is Whirly Reel. Afro-Celt sound system with Whirly Reel. The track featured James McNally on Boron, Masamba Diop on Talking Drum, keyboardist Martin Russell, Davey Spillan on Illin Pipes, guitarist Simon Emerson, Celtic harpist Merthin, and Cauding Sisico on Cora. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge-Free Y-Stream.
Wood Services proudly supports WHYY. Since 1913, Wood Services has helped change the lives of children and adults with special needs, like Maddie. Arriving at the age of 15, Maddie had access to the meaningful care and life-altering supports that Woods provides to individuals on the autism spectrum who deal with frequent angry outbursts. 2 years later, Maddie is bringing joy to her family and those around her. Woods helps people with special needs achieve success. Learn more at woods.org. Woods Services. Exceptional people. Fulfilling lives.
Bard Academy at Simon's Rock supports WHYY and will host an open house on Friday, November 6th. Located in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Bard Academy's two-year boarding and day school prepares students to enter college early. More information about academic and residential programs, the faculty, and the campus located in the Berkshires is available online at simons-rock.edu. Bard Academy at Simon's Rock supports WHYY.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. When Superstorm Sandy slammed into the New Jersey shore 3 years ago, it also devastated the rural area known as the Delaware Bay Shore, where the Delaware River funnels into the Atlantic Ocean. Instead of sending funds for rebuilding efforts, the state offered to buy out some homeowners in hopes of turning the area back to nature. And while some residents have taken the cash, WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports others want to repair the damage and preserve the culture of the Bay Shore.
Kate Nelson lives in a tiny town called Bay Point in a small house she and her husband are fixing up. They used to have a larger home along the Delaware Bay, but Sandy destroyed it. They also used to run the town's only marina, but they sold that to the state. Nelson says it made sense to take the buyout, but she still isn't over it.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome, the military get it, but we do too. I mean, I can't go by a marina without getting upset, and they'll tell you, I mean, we are... I was devastated when I saw that excavator chew into my bait and tackle shop. It was my life.
A dozen property owners in Bay Point have taken buyouts since Sandy, which has made the small town even smaller.
I'm the secretary of the club now, and I have to do the release of the deeds for the people that are buying out, and it's just heartbreaking to each of us.
But Nelson and her husband aren't ready to pack up their truck and move inland just yet. For one, they say the state isn't offering them enough money to relocate. But more to the point, Nelson and her husband Mike, who grew up in Bay Point, can't see themselves living anywhere else.
And it'll be our choice to stay here with the elements, but we love it. You don't get the sunsets in the city or the birds, and we love fishing and crabbing. So hopefully that's where they'll let us stay here.
The buyouts are part of a New Jersey program to purchase and tear down waterfront homes and turn flood-prone regions into environmentally protected areas. So far, New Jersey has demolished more than 250 houses through the program. But some residents on the Bay Shore feel like the push to turn their towns into a nature preserve has overshadowed their need for help after Sandy.
In all honesty, I don't think there's anyone around this area that would deny the fact that the rest of the state, northern, where the beaches are, the big stuff, they don't even know we're here, nor do they care. So we're just going to make it on our own.
Shirley Fonash co-owns the Charlesworth Hotel, a longtime restaurant in the Bayshore town of Fortescue.
People are tough down here. They have to be to exist. Because as far as the rest of the state is concerned, forget it. We're not here.
So when the Charlesworth sustained hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage during Sandy, it almost closed for good. That is, according to Shirley's husband, Jim, until local groups of volunteers offered to help the couple rebuild.
We've had doctors and lawyers on their hands and knees shoveling dirt in the basement. I mean, people you just wouldn't believe coming out to help us.
So while the state and some environmental groups want to turn the Bay Shore back to nature after the storm, Sandy actually seemed to draw locals closer together than they had ever been before.
From where I sit, it looks like more people recognize the Bay Shore as a region and recognize that they have something in common with their neighbors down the road, instead of feeling like everybody's individually having their own issues and their own fight. I think that it's brought people more together.
Megan Wren runs the Bay Shore Center at Bivalve, a former hub for oyster fishing on the Delaware Bay. After Sandy, Wren became a kind of local organizer, helping residents in the Bay Shore region recover from the storm.
Though the recovery is not complete, and I don't know if it ever will be, I like to think of one of the legacies being people willing to work together more.
Shirley Fonash, who co-owns the restaurant in Fortescue, says business is still slow, but interest in the Bay Shore has never been stronger. She credits Sandy for that and says the Bay Shore culture, more than the fear of what the next big storm might do, motivated them to stay.
You can't just spend your whole life worrying about what's going to happen. We're here. We want to see it brought back to life. And so here we stay.
From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, happy 333rd birthday, Philadelphia. On October 27th, 1682, William Penn signed his famous treaty with the Lenape of the village of Shackamaxon in what's now the city's Fishtown neighborhood. As we all know, Penn chose the name Philadelphia to indicate we are the city of brotherly love. The sisterly affection part that Mayor Michael Nutter regularly adds came later. It's been traced as far back as 1849 to an anonymously written pamphlet containing, quote, a list of the gay houses and ladies of pleasure in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. A copy of that pamphlet resides in the collection of the Library Company of Philadelphia. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. The use of psychotropic medications in Pennsylvania's state-operated juvenile correctional facilities has come under scrutiny, and we'll talk with the author of that report on tomorrow's program. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.